We are Rogue Media Sports.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. The season has come to a close. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, joining you as we do Frito Nation Productions with the producer Chris Gross filling in for Frito. And Ed, it's finally here. I mean, we thought this would happen 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Cowboys sort of made us all wait, and we thought, oh my gosh, we might be having to tape this thing late into the evening to see if Washington would lose to the Eagles. That is no longer necessary because the Cowboys lose 23-19 on the road to the New York Football Giants. And now, Ed, the Giants get to wait and root for those Eagles to beat the Giants, the Washington football team. Ed, here we are. Can you believe it? It finally has happened.
No, and I know we want to spend a lot of this broadcast talking about Mike McCarthy and how he's managed this team in several games with some bizarre decisions and what's going to happen with them re-signing Kellen Moore to be offensive coordinator and the future of Mike Nolan as a defensive coordinator. But a few thoughts just on the way it ended today. The Giants ended Dak Prescott's season in week 5. They ended it for everybody else on the Cowboys in week 17. The Cowboys are eliminated by a 5-win team led by the only first-time head coach in the league. They finished 6-10. The franchise has had a worse record only once in the last 18 years. I tweeted this during the game. Anybody surprised by the poor level of football being played by the Cowboys and Giants hasn't been watching the Cowboys and Giants, because these teams played exactly the level of football we should have expected from two teams combining for fewer wins than the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Packers, and the Steelers. Those teams all have more wins themselves than these two teams combined. And there he was, the redheaded wonder, Jason Garrett, fired just about a year ago, celebrating his anniversary, his divorce from the organization, by being involved in doing as a Giants offensive coordinator what he did so often as a Cowboys head coach, eliminating the Cowboys from the postseason late in the year. I also want to put this in perspective one more way here. The Giants, remember, the Giants have won 5 games. They've been the worst team in the division for 4 years. The Giants won their 6th game of the season despite not converting a single third down. They went 0-7. It's the first time since the 1970 merger the Giants won a game without converting a single third down. They also were -1 in turnover margin. They ran 25 fewer offensive plays, losing the time of possession 32 minutes to 27 minutes, and they still beat the Cowboys. Last year, the Cowboys could have won the division and gone to the postseason with the right 8-8 record under Jason Garrett. They can't pull it off. This year, it might have only taken 7-9 under Mike McCarthy, and they can't pull it off. I mean, this was an epic disaster. I know we can have all kinds of excuses. The injuries and the pandemic all are very justifiable, but the way this thing ended, the inglory with which this team covered itself at the end, is got to be quite disappointing to Cowboys Nation.
The inglorious Cowboys. I don't know how Ed does that just off the top of his head like that. I like the line about Garrett having done what he used to do with the Cowboys, eliminated himself. You still got to poke it at Garrett, even as he had his great moment with the New York Football Giants. Chris Gross in the Frito Nation Productions. Will you play the music, sir? It is the Doomsday Podcast, the final one of the Cowboy season as it comes to a crashing halt. Cowboys finish 6-10, and as Ed explained, just an amazing feat. The Cowboys were able to basically, I guess, we'll see what the Eagles do. They're going to finish third in the division. Could finish tied for the Giants, but the Giants, by virtue of this win today and tiebreakers, we're going to give the Giants, we're going to automatically give them second place. What a pitiful performance today. And Ed, we got a hit on this. I mean, there he was after I jumped on the conference call. You were covering another game, so I tried to cover us and jump in there on the postgame conference call, and there was Mike McCarthy defending some of those game management decisions today. Let's start with this one. Let's start with about 7 minutes left and a completion, which, you know, apparently it was ruled a completion by the Giants, about a 10-yard pass.
And Dante Pettis
out there. And basically everybody starts to look at that thing and go, whoa, 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 what is this? Is this, are we sure this is a catch kind of thing? And then Mike McCarthy, who's looking up at the big board, taking a peek, and obviously we think was in touch with his eyes in the sky with his, you know, the game operator or the Cowboys folks up in the press box, and he decides not to challenge it, and the Giants jump out there and kick the field goal that put them up by 4 points. And a 50-yard field goal. And, Ed, obviously, without that, they would have either had to punt or try an insanely long field goal. A really remarkable moment with Mike Pereira on the Fox broadcast basically saying that would have definitely been overturned and ruled a non-catch. So
it would have pushed the Giants out of field goal range or at least, like you said, made it a much more difficult a decision on whether to try and kick the field goal. And McCarthy's explanation after the game was that he felt it was too close a play, a bang-bang type of situation, he called it, and he didn't want to risk one of his three timeouts because he felt, you know, being behind at that in that situation was – those were high-value assets that he wanted to protect. But listen to this. I think this is kind of interesting. Mike McCarthy – has used his challenge, his red challenge flag, only twice all season. And if you look at his history when he was in Green Bay from 2006 to 2018, he challenged calls 84 times, which was the fourth most in the league behind Sean Payton, John Harbaugh, John Fox. McCarthy was 42-42 on his 84 challenges. So half the time he won. But he only threw the challenge flag twice in 16 games this year. Like, was he officiating that good or that favorable? That seems hard to believe.
I think the analytics that Barn, they got in and where he worked with all those analytics folks, convinced him that timeouts are precious. You cannot ever
timeouts. But when there's an obviously questionable call that provides you such an enormous benefit if you're right, you have to do it at that point. And I think that was a huge mistake, but to me, that was not his biggest mistake of all in this game. It wasn't his biggest mistake in this game. And
you found a bigger one.
Oh, I thought, first of all, I think his mind-boggling strategic decisions have been an issue, not only Sunday, but throughout this 6-10 debacle. In fact, I said, Jerry Jones must have eliminated McCarthy's beloved analytics department to fund Kellen Moore's contract extension, because in a low-scoring game, McCarthy didn't go for two after the Ezekiel Elliott touchdown that made it 20-15. So if he goes for two, they're only down three. They need a field goal to tie the game. As it is, he kicks it. They're still down four. They need a touchdown. And on the very next series, Greg Zuerlein kicks his fourth field goal of the game. So now the Cowboys are down 20-19. If they go for it and they get it, they're tied. Why didn't they go for two after the Elliott touchdown? Especially as bad as they've been in the red zone. So in that, at that juncture, I think there's like 8:49 left in the game and declining to go for the 2-point conversion following the Zeke touchdown. They needed a touchdown, not a field goal against the Giants. And on the day, they had one touchdown and four field goals at that point. They were far more likely to kick a field goal than they were to score another touchdown. And then they go into that final red zone sequence at the end of the game. Andy Dalton sacked by an unblocked rusher. CeeDee Lamb drops a ball in the middle of the field. And then Dalton throws a reckless end zone interception on third down with another down still to play.
Mm.
But, you know, McCarthy said that he thought it was too early in the game to go for two. and then he's asked, does he think his game management's been an issue throughout the season? No, he says, not at all. Well, I totally disagree with that. And I check with our analytics people at ESPN, Seth Walder, a very esteemed analytics gentleman. Told me that the McCarthy's decision cost the Cowboys about 1 point of win probability, that they their chance to win by attempting the point after at that moment was 27%. Their chance to win if they go for two is 28%. And he said, although 1 percentage point doesn't seem like a lot, it's clear he should have gone for it. Here's another way to put it. Dallas only needed a 33% chance of converting to justify going for it. The league average is 48%, so there's no ambiguity. And I think when you put this up with, you know, the loss to Washington on Thanksgiving, when he goes for fourth down twice in a 4-point game in his own end of the field, like how do you do that? How does the same man make that decision, but then not go for two in such an obvious situation? And then remember, the whole season started week one at the Rams. He passes up an easy, you know, field goal in a fourth quarter that would have tied the Rams and goes for it on fourth down and fails. And I looked it up and had our research department, you know, look at it, the course of his career in Green Bay in 13 years. He never once made that decision. So there's just all kinds of inconsistency with what he's done in these situations. And most of it seems like it's been wrong and it's hurt the team. And I mean, one of the things he sold Jerry and Steven and, you know, tried to sell other owners on was during this year away, after he was fired from Green Bay, took last season off. One of the things he did was he really bought into the whole analytics thing. And the Cowboys have a big analytics department. But, man, I think they have gotten it wrong an awful lot since Mike McCarthy became the head coach.
I could not agree more, Ed. And it's a point I make in an upcoming series that I've written. I hope you're allowed to retweet it. I know it's a different – it's a rival organization.
That's okay. But I can retweet it. Don't worry.
It'll be on foxsports.com, I think, tonight. It'll start running, but my contention, Ed, is that that time spent the barn or with the analytics or whatever, it's like you've hit on this before. I think it's something we've talked about. In some weird way, it's like maybe he's had an identity crisis. Like it was almost like he had too much time away that he's like, okay, so here's my new approach. But then, like you said, he gets at a point where it sort of makes sense, or it makes a lot of sense, as you said, is backed up by ESPN stats and information. It makes sense to go for two, and he doesn't. So in some sense, he's sort of going back to whatever his gut's telling him. Hey, don't chase it here. Hey, don't chase the two. Don't chase the points or whatever, which is kind of an old point that we've made for years.
But so it really didn't matter because they're either down four or they're down five. You know, doesn't matter if they fail.
Yeah, but he wasn't thinking – well –
you had to be chance to be down three if you succeed on the 2-point conversion.
Well, if you played it out in some scenarios, it might matter because maybe making a touchdown would give them a 7-point lead instead of a 6-point lead. There are scenarios where mathematicians would play it out and go, he made the right call. But I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. This guy's sort of become this daring do. Let's go for it in our own territory. Let's fake punt when we're down by four with 13 minutes left of the game. But here, let's go on some kind of other strategy. I don't know if the guy knows who he is right now. And then his explanations are sort of, you know, that was Kalishaw, I think, asking him, hey, do you think your, he didn't say it like a personal thing. He said, do you think your team has had some game management? Obviously, you know, trying to say, coach, do you have some game management issues? And then he answered, as you said, no, not at all. And then on the thing you're talking about, he said, I thought it was a, I thought it was a clean decision there. Kind of a, I don't know.
His whole quote on deciding at 20 to 15 after Elliott's touchdown, he said there was too much time left to go for the 2-point conversion to make it a 3-point game. He said, time is part of the equation there. There's other variables you look at. You have numbers, obviously, that you're aware of going into the game, but how the game's being played and all the other variables are discussed, that's why the decision was made. And I thought it was a clean decision. And like I said, I think it was a foolish decision. And you're talking about playing in a low-scoring game. You're talking about playing in a game where you've kicked 4 field goals, you have 1 touchdown. Do you want to end up with your last possession needing a field goal or a touchdown in that situation? I would argue you want the field goal.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. And
and the way it played out, you saw what happened. You know, on third down, desperation, you know, gets its hands on Andy Dalton, and he makes a very bad decision when he could have just eaten the ball and they could have kicked the field goal if they had succeeded in going for 2 after their only touchdown.
Yeah, does it ever hit you, like all these deja vu moments? Like when you say that part you just said about Andy Dalton on third down didn't have to do that. He threw the desperation ball. And I feel like we've said that. I hate to put this on Dak, but that's been the quarterback for the Cowboys the last 4 or 5 years. For some reason, I feel like these things just come flashing back. And the Cowboys do this time and time again. That was a poor decision. And he threw it up there for grabs. By the way, I did see, and they're not going to call it on a Hail Mary kind of looking thing like that. They did. The Giants grabbed, I think it was Schultz. They kind of grabbed him back there in the end zone. So I guess technically you could have called interference, but it was a poor, poor decision. And the Cowboys lose this thing. Ed, how did it hit you sitting up there in the Texans press box? Was it one of relief that the season was over, or was it one of, dang it, this will cut down on the amount of podcast we can do? You know,
I was actually
no more Cowboys games. What was that visceral reaction you had?
Well, I felt confident during the week that they were going to beat the Giants. The Giants are such a poor team on offense. I just didn't think that they could score enough points to win the game the way they've been playing. I mean, the Cowboys went into the game with a 3-game winning streak. I mean, it was all against backup quarterbacks and teams with losing records, but the Giants had one of those two things in play as well. And although every other team in the division had a losing streak, had lost multiple games in a row going into the final week of the season. I did not think Philadelphia was going to beat Washington because you saw. I said that last week at the top of the podcast. I was pretty adamant about that, that they had nothing to play for, and clearly they don't based on their injury report, which looks like they're tanking anyway. I think they had 10 guys who they list as out for the game against Washington. So I think it was going to end tonight one way or the other, but I'm a little disappointed we don't have late night drama. That's what I was expecting. I built my whole schedule around late night drama tonight at the Airport Marriott.
Why don't you go out, have a nice time in Houston, and then let's get together and tape something else later just to make you feel better about this thing. Oh man, it has come to a crashing halt. I would say, Ed, you know, the takeaway Cowboys, 3 in that 3-game winning streak, they had 10 of those takeaways. And then today, with the interception, you know, there was the one fumble in there. I mean, you know, this team was putting, even when it got to 26, they kind of were hanging in there. So I tell you, this team, it sort of turned in. We didn't expect them to tease us. They did. And then ultimately, it was a failure. And while these players, you know, we'll never let them off the hook because there's a lot of failures to go around, just not helped at all by their coaching staff. And Ed, before we get to Stretch, Glenn Stretch Smith, I mean, it was after the game, Mike McCarthy was asked about the defensive coordinator, and he said they would do all their exit interviews. And he said, you know, it'll be the same about me. I thought, yeah, Mike, just make sure you're going to be back. I think he will be. But I still think even with the late season, all the takeaways and the improvement on defense, I would say that Mike Nolan is on his way out with the Cowboys, and that'll obviously bring about some quite a few defensive changes.
Yeah, you know, the Cowboys defense finished the season allowing the most points and touchdowns in franchise history, and to put it in some kind of perspective, they gave up 473 points. The Cowboys under Rod Marinelli last year gave up 321. That's 152 more points this year. And even though, like you said, they got the two takeaways today, that gives them an NFL best 16 takeaways since the bye week in week 11. And they finished with 23. That's the most for a Dallas team since 2014. It just seems like, you know, they just didn't do enough. They were way too vulnerable. Obviously, Jerry admits that, you know, they made a bad decision in trying to install a new defense in an offseason where it was so abbreviated. There were no preseason games. But I still think that it'd be a hard sell to bring Mike Nolan back. But and I think Mike McCarthy is the guy who would want that most of all. And I don't think he's in a position to leverage ownership in that regard if that's what he wants to do. And I'm not sure that's what he wants to do. But I think there's been no equivocation with Jerry and Steven about McCarthy returning. So I think he's going to be able to use the Dak Prescott injury, all the offensive line injuries, the Blake Jarwin injury, and the pandemic issues as a shield against his own potential departure. And I also think, like I've said before, to me, owners in the NFL have lost more revenue than any other season in history because of the limited crowds and ticket sales and suite sales. I just can't see Jerry ousting a coach and paying his salary and his entire staff and the incoming staff and a head coach. They only do that at the University of Texas.
I was headed for that joke. I'm so glad, though. I'm glad you beat me to it. You're right. $24 million. The Texas Longhorns, they found that. They find that money somehow. I don't think it's coming. I think sometimes taxpayers worry. Oh, they're going to take our – it's going to come out of our taxes. No, the boosters will dip in there. The boosters will find a way, and they get the great Sarkisian. Ed, did you ever meet Sark? When he was with the Falcons? I wonder if you ever crossed paths with him.
No, I don't ever recall being around him. I covered their Super Bowl team with Kyle Shanahan, but I think Sarkisian was then followed Shanahan, and it was kind of a difficult transition for Matt Ryan, as I recall.
Yeah, I think that was – maybe they gave it a couple of years, and I think they moved him on back to Alabama. All right, it is that time – for our weekly grades, whoo, so sad. The last weekly grade session, the harshest grader in the NFL, former NFL scout and coach Glenn Stretch Smith, now also does some coaching on the side for one of the great high school programs in the country. Stretch, this was, Troy Aikman, a guy you know well, said something, at some point he said this is kind of a microcosm of the NFC East, or even McCarthy, I think said something like that after the game. But Stretch, I got to say, and I know you're not one, you'd rather kind of break down the players than maybe second guess the coaches sometimes. But I would have to lead you into this with a grenade here. Some more curious game management by the ultimate master of analytics, Mike McCarthy. I would say this is kind of an interesting way to end the season today with the way some of this stuff went down.
Yeah, I'm shocked at really how the whole game unfolded. I mean, I thought that initially, okay, when you get yourself in position to go for two, he'd always gone for two all year long. And I feel like I'm sitting next to a guy who's on third base at the blackjack table, and we played four or five shoes, and he's stood on 16 every time with the dealer showing a 10. And all of a sudden today, he reaches over and asks for a hit. And it just sits you back in the chair like, why didn't you go for two there? Your explanation has been all year, well, we want to see where we're at in the game. We want to go for two to see what's in front of us, see how we're going to have to navigate these waters. When he didn't do that, I'm like, well, what the hell? In this game, why wouldn't you go for two? And then, I mean, you know, we know what happened with the catch, challenging the catch. And then he gets down there first and goal, and they go empty. I'm like, the whole game, the Giants were challenging you to run the football. They played coverage the entire game. I mean, they were always two deep, sometimes three deep, and just begging you to run the football. It gets to be first and goal from the plus 7 yard line, and you're going to doke-yoke them by running empty. I certainly don't get that.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, a not challenging to say keeping timeouts was more important than giving up 3 points. I know it's a 50-yard field goal, but the NFL, those guys should make that when you could have forced somewhere in the 60, and they probably wouldn't have taken that. I mean, I don't think Coach Judge would have even been attempting that from back there. So some strangeness coming from the Cowboys. Stretch, as we start to kind of try to close out the season, we'll have more of this. But today, obviously, the end around got them. Then they got hit on another ball. You know, there were some good plays that Diggs made. I'm thinking of when he was trying to cover. I think it was Slayton, maybe out near the boundary. What did you make of a secondary that I guess the one that the touchdown came on for the Giants, that Jordan Lewis kind of, that was more up the middle of the field there that they hit the Cowboys on. What did you make of the way this secondary played today?
Well, I mean, I like Trayvon Diggs a lot. I mean, I think he can cover. I think he's savvy. I think he uses his hands well. He presses guys into the boundary. I mean, I like Jordan Lewis. I mean, I think Jordan Lewis will be fine from a backup perspective. Anthony Brown, I mean, if you watch him on that first touchdown where they run that reverse, I'm telling you, he acts no more interested to get in contention to even make a play that it really – I sat back and I thought, oh, my gosh. Because quite frankly, they went down the field. I think it was 6 plays it took them to score. They were knocking it off at about 9 yards a clip. And you thought, okay, this team doesn't even look like they want to be in the playoffs. And it really was magnified by Brown's effort on that, because he had every opportunity to come run the alley and cut that off, and he went in there and kind of stuck his head in the backfield, and then did a little James Brown turnaround and spun out of it, and then just kind of stood there and watched the guy score. So it's hard to watch. I do think Donovan Wilson is a good player, but guys, you can stack the rest of these cats up and I think really start thinking about how you're going to, you don't even need to reshuffle the deck. You only got about 3 cards. Just figure out how you're going to get a handful of cards to revamp and retool a secondary. The fellas is bad.
I like what you're saying, though. Wilson does. I mean, he came on that blitz. I know he didn't. He came free, but still a good play there. He gets the interception on the drop by Ingram. Stretch, I know one thing you got to love. You're like a lot of people out there. Do you like the Jalen Smith when he does that swipe celebration? And you never know what he's going to do. And he might do it after giving up about 8-yard run. He might give it the old swipe or the bowling move, whatever you want to call that. Thoughts on the linebacker play today?
No, oh, yeah, I'm real excited about how he gets himself fired up and what he does. And I love that dance. I think it's real original. It stinks, and he needs to quit doing it, because everything about it reeks of look at me, And quite frankly, your average is a bowl of grits. We don't need to look at you. I'm tired of looking at you. We need something else in there. And that's a position that certainly the Cowboys are going to have to go and look at. I think, you know, as much as I love Sean Lee, he's just, you know, he probably would be best served with this franchise to step into a coaching role, because I do think that he's phenomenal with how he gets guys lined up, with how he communicates. I don't know how he, you know, I don't know him personally, so I don't know how he would run a meeting room. But without Van Der Esch, guys, this is a linebacking core that it's just one guy's real long in the tooth, and the other guy is just very, very average. So I don't see anything out of what you're getting from the linebackers right now that would even lead me to or let you try to draw me off sides with that little swipe dance that he does.
They asked him after the game, they said, somebody asked him, do you think you'll be back next season? And well, Jalen gave him an answer kind of like, are you crazy? I mean, I'm one of the best linebackers in the game. How could you dare ask something like that? Okay, the D-line. You know, I'm kind of watching that thing. Alden Smith came in there one time. Lawrence obviously came inside and had the sack on Jones. Walk me through that group and give me your initial take on who you kind of like from all those guys and who you think will be back, including Gallimore. I may try that Neville Gallimore joke. I may leave that alone, but Neville Gallimore, I like that guy.
No, he. I'm telling you now, he was pressed into service with him cutting Don Terry Poe, and he has played well. And every week, he's playing better. I mean, he is a good inside player versus a run. I mean, I like that he was pressed into service and had to do some things. I love Randy Gregory. I saw Dorrance Armstrong today do some things that you in coverage, that if they're going to stick schematically with what they're doing and dropping their defensive end some, I mean, I like him. We know Lawrence is a heck of a player. I still like Tyrone Crawford. I think that they've got a rotation of guys that can come into the game right now. And I really think this has been what has kind of gotten the Cowboys in playoff, you know, whether it was six or seven wins, whatever it was, but it got them in the playoff run was their ability to get up the field and get some pressure on the quarterback with four and five man looks. So I do think that this is the strength of the defense right now is this Cowboys defensive line. And I think moving forward, they need to decide if they're going to schematically move to a real 3-4 look. I personally, I think you could see, you know, George Edwards maybe take this defense over and go more to a four down line look, which is what I think they need to do and what I think they're built around doing. But if they do that, this is going to be the strength of the defense. It is the defensive line. And certainly the young guys and Dorrance Armstrong, Neville Gallimore, I like Randy Gregory, you know, you got to really still consider him almost a second year guy just from a lack of playing time. But boy, you can see why they waited on him because of his upside.
Yeah. And we'll see. No word yet on Mike Nolan. Mike McCarthy said he would kind of do the exit interviews and they'll get on that quickly. And then we'll see where they go after that. Offensive side of the ball, Stretch. Andy Dalton, man, a man who, boy, we were seeing shots of the bleeding through the glove, reminiscent of the bleeding sock that Curt Schilling had in the World Series years ago. It was there was some blood coming through there, and maybe he should have done that in the first half because he kind of played better, banged up in the second half. Stretch, I thought Andy, who'd been good in this three-game winning streak, was all over the map in that first half. What did you see from the Red Rifle?
Yeah, there were guys that looked like that were almost trying to adjust routes, or he was really missing bad. I mean, and the thing that concerned me was leaving the ball inside. I mean, he should have thrown probably three picks in that first half. I know Aikman mentioned it in on the broadcast, balls being left inside when you've got to bring guys back down the stem. I didn't think he played that well. The thing that really concerned me was, and I'll go back to that goal line call, first and goal down there, is the right tackle had to, what they call, sift down because the linebacker came in that gap. And so it left the defensive end, you know, wide. He's hot, basically. You got to get the ball out on him. And Dalton did not see it. The receiver did not adjust. And then it resulted in the sack, which really made me, you know, very critical of the call down there in that empty set. But I didn't think Andy played very well today. He is a tough guy. I mean, he ran the ball on that fourth down conversion. He stuck it up in there trying to get the first down when he caught him in, you know, what was two-man coverage because they were still two high safeties. But guys running with the other receivers man-to-man, and once you kind of break through the defensive line there, there are times that you can stick it up in there and get the first down, and I thought he took advantage of that when they gave it to him. But as far as being able to deliver the football in tighter windows and sticking the football in some tight areas, it was not his best effort.
So would you say that some of those routes and then some of Andy's play today it's like some of those were more on Andy and the receivers than that O-line. The O-line has played better as of late. What did you make of their performance? Obviously, the Cowboys weren't really accomplishing much on the ground, although Zeke, you know, was able to grind it out. He was obviously banged up. What did you make of the and how much do we blame the O-line for some of the pressure that occurred today?
Well, I thought the O-line did. This is the first game in four games that I'm going to be critical of the O-line. The Giants were daring you to run the football. They were playing coverage today, and that's something that we hadn't seen really anybody do. These teams have come in and said, we're not going to allow you to run the football. And so, you know, this three-game winning streak, they were able to take advantage of that and throw the ball around some. Well, the Giants came in and said, you know what? We'll let you run the football if you want to, because we're going to stick with a 5 or 6 man box and we're going to play coverage. And I thought it really brought to light the inexperience, the lack of physicality from the offensive line. I did not see them play well because there were opportunities for them to run the ball. Now, I'm going to say that, and then I'm going to say this, that the coaching, and I don't like to get on play calling, but I'm telling you, the Cowboys look like they went in with inside, outside, zone, and power. That were their three runs. Now, I've never gone into a football game carrying three runs. They didn't run a draw. They didn't try to run anything the one big run that Zeke had for 13 yards. They ran the tight end power, and they never came back to it. And it was there all day. Now, I don't know if they didn't feel comfortable calling it or they didn't think they could block it that well. But when you start talking about the offensive line and really their lack of physicality and inability to knock some guys off the ball, I have to ding them and say I didn't see a very good effort out of that group.
That's a really interesting part on the runs. Stretch, do you think there was a point maybe in the midway through the second quarter that Jerry was kind of thinking, well, maybe Kellen should have taken that Boise State gig?
Well, he was probably thinking, or he was talking to Steven, I wonder if he signed that deal yet. Has he made it official? Went ahead and signed it.
I wonder if he could go up there and coach on that blue field. Steven,
it's the first time I can honestly say, you know, I feel like maybe you're healthy. That's the first belly lap you've given us in about 6 weeks. I'm glad you still got that in you.
It hurts. It hurts when I give you a belly lap, but it's worth it. It's worth to go through some pain for some laughter. And Stretch, you know what time it is, buddy, as we as we wrap this up. What do you think after watching that first half? And going through a season of being second guest on this podcast and in the media, what do you think Mike McCarthy could use this very evening as he settles back in to that hotel room over there at the Omni? What could he use?
I'm going to say an ice cold Miller Lite. How'd I do?
I think you're right. Just ice.
I'm on the edge of my seat, Mosley. Tell me how I did.
You did great. You did great. And, of course, he would want to get to a place where he could be responsible. Get over to the hotel room, ice those down, and even in this time of social distancing, stretch, celebrating a Cowboys win or a loss in this case, with friends over a Miller Lite today. It looks a little different, but whether you're toasting to friends near or far, great taste is always close by. Miller Lite, the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. 30-year partnership goes back to the time Stretch arrived with Barry Switzer and the gang, even back to those late 90s with a team dating back to 1991, I should say. And, boy, it's a three-hour-long ritual, cheering, shouting at the TV, and raising their Miller Lite together. Miller time in Cowboys Nation. And this holiday season, of course, Miller Lite will celebrate the unique occasion with the Cowboys. And that's why, still, you could get a hold of some of those sweaters, hats, and socks from that Thanksgiving Day game. Love those things. Some of that knitwear that I'm going to send to you and Chris Gross and Ed Warder. Love some good knitwear. Okay, celebrate responsibly. Miller Lite Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Stretch, tell them good night.
Fellas, it's been a long year, but I'm glad 2020's over with, and I think we got a lot to look forward to in 2021 too. And I'm gonna toast that last Miller Lite here in 2020. Look forward, Mosley.
Yep, I'm gonna hold off because of the pain meds, but I'm gonna be right there with you. And
I bet you are holding off. Your wife's out of town. I promise you, you're probably over there drinking till the damn world looks flat.
Okay, let's cut this off. It is the Doomsday Podcast. And there he goes, Glenn Stretch Smith. And appreciate our sponsors all year. We've had some really good sponsors this season. And, of course, Miller Lite has been with us. We appreciate them. And I know Ed appreciates them as well. Frito Nation Productions, they've been a big, a nice part of this. And then Revolver, the platform we're on. Thank you to Revolver. All right, Ed. I want to end this. We've already had a lot of interesting comments and thoughts, and we always love hearing from our people. I like it during games, Ed. People will kind of start tweeting, we're ready for the Doomsday Podcast. What are they going to say? And then I try to tell them, okay, here's when we're going to try to tape it. You know, they're always kind of like, when does it drop? When are y'all going to have it? And we appreciate that. We like that kind of we don't mind people wondering and clamoring for the Doomsday Podcast. That brings us a lot of joy, actually. Ed, news breaks that Kellen Moore has signed a 3-year extension. You and Chris Mortensen were basically breaking all that news, and it's going to come back. We'll remain with the Cowboys. Ed, can you shed some light a little bit on, and I've been digging in here a little bit on this. I happen to know actually who's going to end up at Boise State as the new AD. Jeremiah Dickey is a good friend of mine, but Jeremiah is stepping into an interesting situation because Boise State had been talking to Kellen Moore about their opening for head coach with Brian Harsin leaving to go to Auburn. Ed, can you shed a little light on how this all happened and maybe how close do we think Kellen Moore came to leaving?
Well, according to Troy Aikman, he actually accepted the job at one point at Boise State, his alma mater, where he won 50 games as a starting quarterback and finished fourth in the Heisman Trophy balloting. And, you know, he spoke about his affection for the area, for the school. Obviously, it's a high-level winning program with great facilities, and so it appealed uniquely to Kellen Moore, who also in the process has talked about his desire to become a head coach. But ultimately, you know, like Jerry Jones did with Sean Payton and Mike Zimmer, they and Jason Garrett, the Cowboys prevailed with probably money, probably suggestions of a potential future where, you know, he would be the head coach eventually for the Cowboys organization. I think if you're Jerry Jones, the last thing you want to see after having the Sean Payton experience is to be in a situation where timing prevents you from holding on to a really bright assistant offensive coach and play caller, you know, like it did so many years ago with Sean Payton and Bill Parcells still here. Well, you can't let that happen again with Kellen Moore. You can't let Kellen Moore go somewhere else and lose control of his future if you think that he might be your head coach sometime soon. So I think this
you're turning McCarthy into Wade Phillips, by the way.
Well, I mean, it might be that. I don't think it's going to be that this year. But, I mean, I think there's a little pressure on Mike McCarthy next year. And if you don't want – if you're Jerry and you're Steven and you don't want Mike McCarthy calling the plays, then I think this is what you have to do, right? Obviously, they didn't like the other options that were out there that McCarthy suggested. And they certainly didn't want McCarthy calling the plays, or they would have just had him do it when they hired him. Instead, they didn't, which surprised us all. So now Kellen Moore's under contract till 2023, which is 1 year before Mike McCarthy's contract expires. Isn't that interesting timing? But I would say this does a couple things. I think it improves their chances of convincing Dak Prescott to sign a long-term extension because he trusts Kellen Moore, and he recognizes that most of the league's greatest quarterbacks have benefited from playing in one system for the majority of their careers. And then I think the other thing is it protects the franchise should McCarthy, I was going to say fail anytime soon, but how about continue to fail? The guys, you know, Kellen Moore's 32 years old. We've seen young play callers in this league become very successful as head coaches. Kyle Shanahan, you know, Sean McVay, Kevin Stefanski just won a division with the Browns. And I know a lot of people complain about Kellen Moore. And there's no question they need to be better in the red zone and in goal to go offense. And I think a lot of the reason they're not is because of the offensive line injuries, because they should be really good. They have a running quarterback when Dak Prescott's healthy, and they have a two-time NFL rushing champion at running back. So they ought to be better in those situations than they've been. But I think, and I'm going to end this conversation with this, two historic accomplishments for Kellen Moore in just two seasons as an NFL play caller. This season, the Cowboys have had 500 yards of offense four times in a game, which ties a franchise record with the 1966, 1978, and 2019 teams for the most such games in franchise history. So that means that the Cowboys have done this 16 times in their history, and Kellen Moore has been calling the plays in half of those games. So that's, to me, is quite a statement. And then, of course, last year, his first year as a play caller, you know, they have, for the first time in their 60-year franchise history, they have a 4,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, and not one but 2,000-yard receivers. Never been done before. So Kellen Moore has had a big hand in some positive history for the Cowboys offenses in the 2 years he's been the play caller.
I believe so. And I was a naysayer early on, and I've had to come around a little bit on that. There's some fair criticisms of him. Ed, you'll like this. I looked up as quickly as I can with this neck injury to see some breaking news. I may have just heard it on your phone too. And I thought, oh, this may be something we need for the podcast. And I believe it was the news we maybe all thought was coming. The Jets will part ways with Adam Gase. I thought that had happened like 2 months ago. That did not feel like huge breaking news, but Ed, we'll continue. It's going to be a big off season. You got the whole Dak Prescott thing. You got decisions that need to be made there. And obviously we'll see what the negotiations, where they lead. We'll see what they do with Zeke. They're going to have some decisions early in the league year that they kind of need to make with him. We don't think he'll be released, but, there's some things that kick in early in the league year for some guaranteed money with him. That'll be interesting. And obviously, defensive coordinator, the defensive coaching staff will be taking a long look at that. And it's going to be a very interesting offseason for the Cowboys. And I know you'll be reading as my four-part series on FoxSports.com begins this very evening.
Yeah, you're right, and I will be reading it. And two important things I think that'll be determined are, what is the NFL salary cap going to be for next season? Because like you mentioned, if the Cowboys pay Dak Prescott on the franchise tag again, his salary goes up to $37.7 million. So that's obviously an interesting issue, is what is the cap and how will the Cowboys manage that? And then the other thing, obviously the draft becomes a bigger part of the equation with the Cowboys, given the fact that they finished 6-10 and will have a higher than usual draft pick.
All right. You will, I think that's all correct. And you will really enjoy part two on Dak, because I mentioned you and the Doomsday Podcast. Now, I'm not saying your name could get edited out, but it was, just so you know, it was certainly in there at the time it was sit in. So we'll see what happens with that. Four-part series coming up. Ed, great work by you all season under interesting circumstances, because the Cowboys were so bad that you were taken off the Cowboys beat for in some ways, as far as game coverage. You were too important to ESPN, so you had to be in other places. You always made it work, and we really appreciate that. I thought Chris Gross came in on the fly and took over when we had, obviously, Frito was down for the count. I was down for the count with an injury. And boy, Ed, you kept rolling with this thing. And then KG came in and was really a stabilizing force for us, and we appreciate the heck out of him. And, Ed, the good news is Frito is home. I saw that he had been reunited with his dog, Rona. Obviously, the name, you know where that came from. And it was good to see him back with his puppy dog. And he's looking good, looking thin, looking good, and really making some strides. And so I'm hoping next fall, I don't want to lose KG, but I am hoping we are back at full strength with the Doomsday Podcast.
I'm impressed that you found a optimistic way to end a 6-10 season.
That's right. That's right. All right. There he was, Ed Werder, for Chris Gross, for Frito Nation Productions. I'm Matt Mosley saying good night and good luck.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.